welcome to Rabble Radio. It's Friday, May 19th, 2023. I'm your host, Brianne Doyle. Thanks so much for tuning in. Rabble's got its finger on the beat of the issues that matter to you. If you're curious about the latest news in Canadian politics, labor, environment, or social justice, you've come to the right place. This is news for the rest of us, free of corporate influence. This week on Rabble Radio, Georgia Kelly and Norm DePasquale discuss why the current renovation plans for Ontario Place may not be in the best interest of Ontarians or the surrounding wildlife and environment. Norm DePasquale is the co-chair of the grassroots advocacy group Ontario Place for All. Ontario Place for All aims to ensure Ontario Place redevelopment plans truly serve the public of Ontario, maintains the cultural heritage of the building, and respects the surrounding environment. A little about Norm, he has been fighting for waterfront public space for a decade, leading the No Jets TO fight against jets at the Island Airport. In the past, he has been an elected school board trustee in Ontario and has also run in federal and municipal elections. Georgia Kelly is a third-year undergraduate in the University of Toronto's Ethics, Society, and Law program. She works as an associate editor for the student newspaper, The Varsity, and is working towards a career as a journalist. She primarily reports on labor issues on campus and local business issues around Toronto. Here are Georgia Kelly and Norm DePasquale in conversation. Take a listen.
Hi, Norm. Thanks so much for joining us at the Rabble podcast. Why don't we just get started by you just introducing yourself and what you do more generally in politics?
Sure. So yeah, my name is Norm DePasquale, and I'm the co-chair of Ontario Place for All. Ontario Place for All is a grassroots group that is aiming to have, aiming to push for Ontario Place to use the same sort of redevelopment that the rest of the waterfront has really successfully redeveloped itself under, with a focus on public interest rather than commercial interest driving the vision of a future of Ontario Place. I've worked in many grassroots organizations over the years, including No Jets TO, where we successfully fought back against jets at the Island Airport. And now a beautiful park is being born out of that advocacy instead of a giant parking lot by the Island Airport. So it's nice to see that the finish line and like some sort of like a flower blooming out of your advocacy. And Ontario Place is absolutely worth fighting for. So this is where I find myself today.
What was the first moment that you sort of turned your eyes towards this project?
Yeah, so in 2019, the Ontario government announced the redevelopment plan for Ontario Place. And in that initial plan, they said everything can go. The Cinesphere can be knocked down, the pods can be knocked down, Trillium Park can be demolished. And that was a moment where the local community said, no, no way. And, you know, quite a few of us who won previous battles on the waterfront decided to come together and create this group, Ontario Place for All. So we quickly held our first rally in January of 2019, and we had something like 300 people come out, and they all recorded their memories of Ontario Place, as well as, you know, spoke very loudly that we didn't want to see everything in Ontario Place erased. There was great heritage value there. And we worked with other groups like Architectural Conservancy of Ontario, and we got the Ford government to pull back on, and we managed to save the Cinesphere pods and Trillium Park from destruction. During that time, I also got elected a school board trustee, so I did take a step back. But then after the municipal election, I decided this is what I wanted to do with my spare time when I'm not working my full-time job, was to rejoin Ontario Place for All. And they were looking for help, you know, in some help, like in a leadership level. So I rejoined and I became co-chair again.
Now, for the listener who is maybe not from the GTA and hasn't really heard of Ontario Place before, prior to all this redevelopment projects, how would you describe Ontario Place?
Yeah, so Ontario Place was born out of a great sense of provincial pride. So Montreal in 1967 had the Expo, and, you know, they set up a lot of beautiful buildings there. And, you know, Premier John Robarts thought that Ontarians should have a place that they could look at as their backyard, which celebrated and it reflected Ontario in a public space. So from this amazing vision, Ontario Place was born. And what it is it's a very large waterfront park that combines modernist architecture with incredible landscape architecture. in a way that is so unique, it's actually listed on the World Monuments Fund as a site of special interest, which is also at risk right now. But, you know, over 50 years, things like the Children's Playground opened up there, which was very popular. And, you know, at various times, they tried to run an amusement park there. And there was a very popular concert venue called The Forum, which really featured a lot of Ontario-based bands. And the Cinesphere premiered the IMAX technology, which we see in all the movie theaters now. So you can see how Ontario Place in the past always celebrated and reflected Ontario. And we think that's such a great vision for Ontario Place, like to celebrate and reflect Ontario, and that public interest, not commercial interest, should always drive the vision of Ontario Place. This is meant to be each one of our backyards, and we should see ourselves celebrated and reflected in it, and maybe also be inspired as Ontarians in a place like Ontario Place.
So maybe you could talk a little bit more about your vision. When you say this is everyone's backyard, like what does that mean in, if I can say, in more concrete terms?
Yeah, so, you know, not everyone has a backyard. Like, you know, through this province, there are many of us that live in an apartment and you know, say can't afford a backyard or a cottage. And Ontario Place is meant to be that place to go and have, you know, and reflect on what it is to be an Ontarian and celebrate being an Ontarian in a beautiful space. And, you know, that is what it has been for 50 years. And we would like to continue to see the vision go in that direction.
All right. So fast forward to 2019, when the Ford government announces this redevelopment plan. If Ontario Place was so wonderful and it was popular, what changed in those 50 years?
So, you know, I see a lot of parallels to the Science Center, which the Ford government is also attempting to demolish now. So unfortunately, government after government neglected the space to the point where in 2012, the Liberal government of the time closed Ontario Place. But then they reopened it in 2017 with an amazing proof of concept that was Trillium Park. If you haven't been to Trillium Park, I strongly recommend that you go. It's in the east part of Ontario Place, and it is fantastic. It has beautiful trails and beautiful views of the city and, you know, planting that reflects Ontario there. It is just a beautiful and thoughtful place, and a lot of Indigenous placemaking as well. You know, then the Ontario government was going to continue, you know, creating public spaces throughout the site. But then there was a government change from the Liberals to the PC government. And they really took anything that was public or Ontario out of the redevelopment plans for Ontario Place, where they just made it into a worldwide RFP where anybody could bid. And, you know, what comes out of that process, what comes out of it is an Austrian spa, like which is a spa franchise, like the McDonald's of spas. That's going to be put on our waterfront. And when you look at an Austrian spa, it has nothing to do with Ontario Place. You might as well rename the place any place because it has lost the connection to Ontario and really runs completely against the reason why Ontario Place exists in the first place.
Tell me a little bit more about these like proposed redevelopment plans. What are the ins and outs of them?
Sure. So there was a commercial RFP that was done in 2019, or a request for proposals, and it's all very secret. We have no access to it. But the three winning bids were an Austrian mega spa from Thermé, then the Budweiser stage, Live Nation wants to expand that. And then the third winning bidder was Echo Recreo, which they were from Montreal and they do outdoor adventure, things like zip lining. But Echo Recreo, for reasons unknown, pulled out. So now we're left with the Austrian mega spa, and it seems like a larger Budweiser stage. But the only thing that, you know, the detailed application that right now is at city council is for the Austrian mega spa. So that's why we're really focusing our attention on that. We know more about that Austrian mega spa and its issues, which I'd be happy to tell you about.
You at Ontario Place for All clearly disagree with the development plans. So why don't you tell me why?
Yeah, so I touched a little bit on the first part. So, you know, we're getting an Austrian mega spa at Ontario Place, which has nothing to do with Ontario. So that's the first problem, is turning Ontario Place into any place. Looking into the development application itself, what is planned there is half the height of the Rogers Center. And that's the spa itself, 13 stories. And the admission building is going to be 5 stories on the land side. And then there'll be like a cruise ship style bridge that takes you into this mega spa. So it's a really large scale. And it's because they're trying to put 14,000 people through there a day. When you look at the whole thing together, it looks like a Klingon cruiser. It is really a massive, massive structure. And that structure will take everything on West Island. So every single tree on West Island has to be clear cut. All vegetation gone. Anything that you, if you go to West Island today at Ontario Place and you look around, everything you see will be gone. And that includes 850 mature trees, all the vegetation and, you know, the animal species that depend on those things. And then, you know, going into costs. So the site servicing to support this mega spa is $200 million, and they're planning to put an underground parking lot there at a cost of $450 million, which is estimated. The reason why this parking lot is so expensive is because it is under the water table. So you essentially have to build kind of a bathtub to make sure that no water gets into this parking lot. So it's going to be furiously expensive to build and maintain. So now we're up to $650 million of corporate welfare. So each Ontario taxpayer is paying $60 to put down this private spa so that when it opens, we can pay again to enter what was a public space.
So if I'm hearing you correctly, there is, you know, an environmental concern. There's like a sort of provincial or community identity concern.
Yep.
And then we have just like what sounds like maybe about a business decision.
Yeah, I mean, to make matters worse, the lease is 95 years. So it's essentially like the 407 all over again. We are giving up the space and we're giving it up for our children, our children's children, and their children's children.
I mean, why would the Ford government consider these proposals in the first place? I mean, what benefits do they see?
Well, I think it's some sort of an open for business mentality. Like, you know, Ford was back again at the Ontario Place a couple of weeks ago announcing that they were going to demolish the Science Center and move a shrunken one to Ontario Place. And then he was announcing that this company, Ontario Live, is going to run the bars and clubs at Ontario Place. And Ontario Live is owned by the nightclub owner of Music, who is a friend of Rob Ford's. So I just feel like, you know, he's going to keep piecemeal selling parts of Ontario Place. We are not at the end. You know, like the space that Echo Recreo moved out from, I'm sure that he is talking to other people to take that space. So I just worry that, you know, it's a large mega spa, but it's also the thin edge of the wedge. And he'll keep selling parts of Ontario Place to either his friends, his contacts, or businesses from around the world.
Now, as for the environmental concerns that you mentioned, I mean, are there any protections in place that should prevent, you know, someone from bulldozing 850 mature trees?
Well, there should be. You see, we have in Ontario, there's something called an environmental assessment that would look at that and say, are there alternatives to doing this? Should this be done? But the Ontario government has found a way to weasel out of doing an environmental assessment because they say that Therme is doing the entire West Island by themselves without the government helping. So it's a private project, and hence no environmental assessment is required, which to me all sounds a bit rich because the Ontario government is working on West Island right now. So how can it be that Therme is doing all the work when I see the government working on West Island as we speak? There is another option, which is a federal impact assessment. And you might have heard of Minister Guilbeault considering doing one of these on the Greenbelt. They're going to be lake filling what is fish habitat right now. And also they're going to be affecting a migratory bird runway, which is, you know, our central waterfront with this mega glass spa. That's not going to be good for birds. So I think that these are a couple of issues that we can bring to Minister Guilbeault to do a federal impact assessment. I mean, when you talk about disrupting 190 species of birds and animals, they're obvious. And then, you know, taking down mature trees, which are very difficult to grow in an urban setting and even harder to grow in a waterfront setting, we should have some environmental protection for that.
So are you still in the process of like petitioning for a federal assessment?
Yes. So we're kind of at the beginning part of that. We will soon be putting in an application for an impact assessment. And then we're going to be asking all of our supporters to email their MPs to, you know, try to get those MPs on board with that impact assessment. You know, this government can't just run roughshod over the environment everywhere they go without some sort of a check and balance. So I appreciate the fact that this impact assessment exists. And I think that it's the Ontario Place is the perfect fit to defend our public space.
Now, I know that you've found a lot of partner organizations in this fight. So why don't you tell me a little bit about those?
Sure. So Swim Drink Fish is one. You know, they really care about, you know, this part of this is Lake Ontario Waterkeeper, and his job is to ensure that our lake is clean to swim, drink, and fish in. So they've renamed the organization Swim Drink Fish. And they test the water quality at the beach that we already have at Ontario Place very regularly. So we actually did a Jane's Walk last week, and we had something like 250 people come out with us. And the Swim, Drink, Fish folks talked about where, like, they're planning to put a new beach in as part of this mega spa development, but it's going to be right next to a sewage outflow. So not super attractive. So they spoke about that. And then they spoke about how the current beach at Ontario Place, which is a pebble beach, it's cleaner and it's there right now. And it's actually really well used. And the people from Swim, Drink, Fish are testing the water quality there very regularly. We really appreciate them. And we appreciate organizations like Cycle Toronto. You know, I'm very concerned with this 2000 spot underground parking lot right off the Martin Goodman Trail, because there's going to be so many cars turning left right into the Martin Goodman Trail. Like, it's almost professional malpractice to be encouraging that those kinds of, you know, collisions between active transportation people and, you know, cars that maybe have just come off the highway and are trying to speed into a left turn. It's a disastrous idea. So, you know, we're finding very many natural allies, including people like Climate Fast and, you know, other Toronto climate organizations. And we're really grateful for their support.
I wouldn't have thought of the issue of bikers when you first mentioned the development plans. That's interesting to think about.
Yeah. You know, it like our waterfront doesn't need a new, very large underground parking lot. Like, we have active transportation leading right to Ontario Place. There's going to be a subway line that is right next to Ontario Place called Ontario Line. And the X has 6,000 parking spots already. And Ontario Place already has 1,200 parking spots. So why they think we need a 2,100 car underground parking lot that every Ontarian is going to pay money for, it is absolutely beyond me and flies in the face of climate change. It is the wrong move.
When we're talking about the future of Ontario Place, you know, it's clear that whether it's, you know, the spa or not, you know, Ontario Place has to change in mm-hmm. some way. You know, it's been neglected, as you said. Yep. What is a better alternative for how Ontario Place can be developed?
Yeah, so a place like Trillium Park is an amazing proof of concept. Like, it, you know, they hired an excellent landscape architect in Walter Kem, and he's created an incredible space where every person can feel proud as an Ontarian that is a public space for us all to share. You know, I look at places like Montreal's waterfront where no one use really dominates. Like, there's a great public area, there's food options, there's vendors in kind of those canisters that you have at Stacked Market. You know, there's a small kind of escape room building. Like, you know, no one use really dominates there, and there's great public space, and you don't feel like, you know, you're staring at like 13-story mega structure. and Chicago has done also great work in places like Millennium Park for their waterfronts, and we can look at those as great examples. You know, they were initially thinking about satellite space for the Science Center. Could we maybe add satellite space for the Aga Khan, for the ROM, for the AGO, get people excited about these Ontario museums, and then, you know, get them onto the subway to go check them out? I think we could do things like that. Like, there's a place to come up with things that promote and reflect and celebrate Ontario. Like, that should be the first criteria.
The conservative response to that would probably be, you know, well, where are we going to get the money for that? Yeah. How are we going to pay the people who take care of this space? What's your response to that?
Yeah, so, I mean, I don't think we ask these questions necessarily about Hyde Park. Like, who's going to pay for Hyde Park? How do we monetize Hyde Park? You know, like, I'd sort of say that question is wrongheaded. And I also would say, if you build an amazing 21st century public space, there will be very logical commercial fits, but you have to go forward with a public vision first. If you get that right, the right commercial fits will follow. Like, is there a place where we could have, like, you know, a venue that was like the Forum that seats like 8,000 people that really focuses on Ontario bands? Sure there is. You know, the Cinesphere helped IMAX launch, you know, their global company. And, you know, there's spaces for marinas, restaurants, all these things make sense. But it should celebrate and reflect Ontario, and the public vision should drive what goes there. And then commercial fits will just naturally follow. You know, I think of spaces like Sugar Beach, Harborfront Center, the Bentway. Like, you know, I can go to the Bentway during an event and I can buy some food. I can go get like a drink or two. You know, I can go to Sugar Beach and then go across the street to like Great Lakes Brewery. Like, you know, when you make an amazing 21st century space, people want to go, and we are dying for parks in this post-pandemic era. So people will want to go, and then they'll enjoy those little commercial spaces that you set up that are a good fit for the place. But you have to lead with that 21st century public space first.
You know, a lot of the issues that you've brought up are very, you know, they hit very close to home for people who are in the GTA. For someone who's, you know, hearing about you guys from a different province or just a little bit further out of town, what do you think the significance of what you're doing is here?
Now, the most powerful ally we have in this fight are Ontarians' memories of Ontario Place. Like, we hear from people from Barrie that tell us the most incredible stories of their time at Ontario Place as a child. We hear from people from, like, you know, Kenora. You know, we had a phone call. We were on Zoomer Radio the other day, and somebody called in from Caledon to tell us how much they loved Ontario Place as it was. And, you know, I think a lot of people still have a very personal stake in this site. And I think people really want to be proud of what goes there and see themselves reflected in it.
So on getting more into the politicking side of things, so there's a mayoral election coming up. How much is the issue of Ontario Place? Is it on the forefront of constituents' minds, would you say?
Yeah, this has absolutely become a key election issue. You know, people like Progress Toronto, they heard Ontario Place in many of the surveys that they sent out asking people what their main concerns were in this election. And I can see it in the way that mayoral candidates' responses to Ontario Place have evolved. They're hearing it at the door. It was actually asked in a poll question the other day, and I'm really happy to see that we have far more opposed to the mega spa than supporting the mega spa as well. But I'm definitely seeing this as a key election issue, and we've seen many mayoral candidates come out and, you know, put out press releases and talk about how they would, you know, work with Ontarians to make an Ontario Place that reflects everyone. So I'm really amazed to see what an election issue it has become.
Here we are now. It's May. What does Ontario Place for All's next few months look like?
Yeah, so our aim for the next few months is to build people power. We are going to be holding rallies and really growing our base all across this province and encouraging people to sign on, you know, and say, tell their MPs, MPPs, councillors that they want an Ontario Place for All. We're actually holding an Ontario Place 50+2 birthday on May 22nd at Ontario Place. And we encourage everyone to come on down. It's completely free. We're going to have some incredible special guest stars. And it'll just be a day to celebrate and also to rally and continue to build that people power so that we can win this fight. Because in my previous grassroots movements, it was people power that won the battle. And every person, when we all come together, we have an enormous amount of power.
It's very inspiring to hear.
It's true. maybe like just to wrap, if I could encourage people to visit OntarioPlaceForAll.com and to just subscribe to our email newsletter and help us get engaged and build people power and win this fight.
Thank you very much for joining me today. I really appreciate you taking the time to speak with me.
It was a pleasure, Georgia.
Norm DePasquale from Ontario Place for All and Rabble Radio volunteer Georgia Kelly in conversation. Thanks so much for that, Norm and Georgia. To learn more about Ontario Place for All, and for those of you who want to donate to the cause, please visit the link in our show notes, or for all of you listening on radio, please visit rabble.ca. Now it's time for a segment we like to call In Case You Missed It, and for that we'll hand it over to Rabble editor Nick Seabrook. Take it away, Nick.
This week in Labour News, Gabriella Kaluge-Kasuga covered a new report from Pride at Work Canada on discrimination in the workplace. The report shared experiences from 2S LGBTQI+ leaders from across the country. The report found that every leader who was interviewed stated that they had experienced some form of discrimination at least one point in their careers. The discrimination that 2S LGBTQI+ leaders experienced resulted in slow career progression, which made career planning difficult. Once in leadership positions, many 2S LGBTQI+ people said that the discrimination lessened and that seniority also brought with it some security. However, the lessened discrimination was not a benefit that was enjoyed as often by transgender, non-binary, Black, and Indigenous leaders. Kaluge-Kasuga reviewed a preview of the report that was released on May 17th, which was the International Day Against Transphobia, Homophobia, and Biphobia. In Toronto politics, Stephen Wenzel profiled Olivia Chow, the leading candidate to replace disgraced Toronto Mayor John Tory. Chow, the wife of late federal NDP leader Jack Layton, is no stranger to the Toronto political scene, having served as Toronto City Councillor for the Trinity Spadina Ward from 2000 to 2005, and then as MP for the same riding from 2006 to 2014. One part of Chow's campaign platform is her City Homes Plan. The plan would see the city build 25,000 new rental homes to benefit roughly 50,000 people. As part of the plan, the city would develop the rent-controlled homes over 8 years, with at least 7,500 affordable units and 2,500 rent-geared-to-income units on land already owned by the city. Chow is comfortably leading a packed race with 100 other candidates running. Tune in to last week's episode of Rabble Radio to hear Stephen Wenzel's exclusive interview with Olivia Chow. Staying in the GTA, Rabble columnist Shreya Kalra discusses lessons that the Toronto Transit Commission could learn from the Delhi Metro. The Delhi Metro was created just 25 years ago. In that time, it has over 391 kilometers of operating lines and 286 stations and carries 2.6 million people per day. That's about 960 million every year. In comparison, the TTC has been in business since 1921, yet Toronto's subway system consists of only 4 lines and 75 stations. Additionally, the Delhi Metro system is environmentally friendly. In 2011, Delhi became the first city in the world whose metro system received carbon credits from the UN for reducing greenhouse gas emissions by 630,000 tons up to that point. Kalra said that the TTC needs to step up its game, saying, quote, "An efficient, reliable, and affordable subway system is absolutely necessary if Toronto wants to meet its environmental goals and put itself on the map as one of the hottest places in North America to live and work." End quote. As always, you can find the full version of these stories and much, much more on rabble.ca.
Thanks so much, Nick. Now, before I end with my usual spiel, I did want to say that Rabble is currently hiring. Are you a journalist under 30 in the Ottawa region? Are you passionate about federal and provincial politics? Then we might just have the job you're looking for. Visit rabble.ca/about/opportunities for more information. And with that, that's it for Rabble Radio this week. Thanks as always for tuning in. If you like the show, please consider subscribing to the show on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. And please rate, review, share Rabble Radio with your friends. It takes 2 seconds to support independent media like Rabble. If you have feedback for the show, ideas, stories, opinions you'd like us to cover, we'd love to hear about it. Get in touch with us anytime at editor@rabble.ca. Thank you to all the journalists and writers who contributed to this week's content on rabble.ca, and thank you to Carl Nirenberg for supplying the music. Lastly, thank you to you for tuning in to Rabble Radio. I'm Brianne Doyle, and I'll talk to you next week.